I mean, you know, when I think of all, you know, all the demonstrations back in the 50s with CND marches and demonstrations and the awful, scary missile thing that happened, you know, with America, you know, demonstrating outside Grosvenor House, you know, absolute thinking that this is the end of the world when they were about to bomb Cuba. And, you know, it's just like, I don't know, it's just been a long period of always just being on the front line somewhere.
Mm. Well, going into that, could I go into asking you what brought you to Greenham?
Solidarity, really. I mean, they were just such heroes. And, you know, I had girlfriends. I had a girlfriend actually down in Berkshire. And then I have a German girlfriend who sort of was driving a sort of community bus in London at the time, and who was very active in all sorts of things like homelessness and all the rest of it. And she just literally said to me, you know, sort of, Amarelle, we've got to go and support them. And I went, yeah. So it was like we went down to Berkshire to stay with Norma, and then we sort of making all our banners and all the rest of it, and there we were all of a sudden. It was just like I was so, you know, I was actually in a state of quite shock, because I just actually left my husband.
Right.
And run off with a very young poet. So I was sort of like, you know, my everything was just like, wow, you know, I was sort of taking on a new world, a completely new world. And everything from that point, you know, I mean, I was demonstrating, of course, to stop. I was up in the Lake District, actually, when I met John. Mm-hmm. And we were in the shadow of Sellafield at the time. So we, you know, that when they were sort of wanting to expand Sellafield, you know, there was a lot of work to be done in advertising and trying to get them to stop it. But of course, you know, they have 10,000 workers. It was a no-go area. I mean, however much money we tried to get against the government to put a law case, they had twice the amount of money. So, you know, it was all lost, but it was a, you know, so, you know, in many ways, I get thrown into things. And I think that, you know, basically, I've always been a musician. Yeah. And always been a singer. So, you know, I try and keep that side of my head focused on continuing that, you know. And so, you know, but I think Greenham was something that I really felt very strongly about. And of course, it sort of overlapped with CND, which I've always been a very avid sort of, you know, sort of defender and subscriber to, you know. So.
So what do you remember from when you arrived at Greenham?
Well, that time, I just remember the amount of people just milling around. And, you know, it was, and I remember all the little things which were tied onto all the, and the fences.
Yeah.
All these beautiful little things and the things that children had done and the little posters. And I, you know, it was just like an installation of art. It was so beautiful. And it was just like, you know, and it was so heartfelt. I was just overcome, you might say. I was very overcome. I mean, I didn't actually see the camp, in a sense, because the camp was, you know, a bit further away. Mm. I just, you know, there was a lot of people and there was a lot to take in. And we came with lots of food to give to people, you know. And this is exactly how I was during the Extinction Rebellion. I sort of like, you know, being on the doorstep, I was just like, cooking food and taking it up there, you know, up to Westminster. So, yeah, that was really, you know, I was only a day tripper.
Yeah.
But the second time I went by coach from London, there again with Ulsa and some girlfriends. Mm-hmm. And that was the actual time when we all circled the base.
Embrace the base, yeah.
Embrace the base, yeah. And that was extraordinarily moving. I think the whole thing was, you know, those women,
Yeah,
absolutely.
And so when you were, did music come into your first visit, or was it just on your second visit where kind of the singing came into it, or was that?
Well, the song that, you know, we wrote, which you have up on your site, materialized, of course, after the second visit.
Right.
And, you know, and it didn't happen straight away. It never does, you know, sort of songs tend to sort of like, you know, sort of sit inside you for quite a while until they just sort of pop out. Mm. And that was, you know, the bass was that one. It was one of those songs that literally sort of took a, I suppose it took it was in within the 2 years afterwards anyway, within the 2 years it was being sort of like, but I mean, you know, we've actually produced 7-8 albums. Mm-hmm. So we've got, you know, that, you know, there was always work going on.
Yeah, with the children.
Yeah. So there was always work going on. But and the bass, and once we'd done that, it was almost like, right, now we've got our political album. So we had this wonderful one called Poison Ball, and we have Democracy, and we've got, you know, I mean, it's got some beautiful political songs, which we, you know, had on two albums, and then we've actually sort of, we remixed it into one album.
And was there lots of singing when you were at Greenham, not just as a performer, as a songwriter, but do you remember music around the camp and women singing together?
Well, I did notice groups of people sitting around playing.
Mm-hmm.
Just like they would do at a festival.
Yeah.
And, it's not as much as I was, you know, in thinking about it, it's not as much as I could have been, because, of course, there were very few men.
Mm.
And it often is, unfortunately, it is very much, you know, I mean, how it was wonderful that, you know, Joni Mitchell turned up once. But I mean, very few women at that time were singer-songwriters, I think. There are many more singer-songwriters now.
Mm.
And so, yeah, there was quite a few drummers, which was nice.
Mm-hmm.
But and of course, there was a few lovely anthems.
Yeah,
that mothers and children were singing, which was lovely.
Yeah,
I can't remember there was one which I really, God, I wish I could recap those years. In fact, Ilse said that she's got some photographs. I was talking to my friend, my German friend in London, and I said, look, we've got to talk about this, because I can't remember exactly all the dates, and do you remember what our posters were like and all the rest of it? And she said, I've got photographs somewhere. But she said, you're not going to ask me to go looking for them, are you? You know, sort of 20 or 30 years of, you know, photographs. Yeah. And I said, well, you know, I might do one day, you know, because, you know, all these are very important.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Any photographs that you've got copies of or anything, we would love to put in the archive.
Yeah.
Just anything to preserve, like, all the elements of the history.
Yes. And, you know, I think that the black and white, because, you know, both she and I were taking, we had a dark room. I had a dark room, and I encouraged her to set up a dark room. So they're all beautiful black and white photographs. And there's something about black and white, which is very, very sort of atmospheric,
I think so, yeah.
There's something, you get the feeling of England.
Mm.
Mud. Winter, you know, sort of like hardship.
Absolutely,
no gloss, you know. Mm. It's not glossed out or anything
it's a lot more powerful in a way.
That's right. And in fact, one of the time, I think it was the second time, was it, do you remember whether the when we did the circle, that it was very muddy, it had been very rainy.
Yeah, it was December, wasn't it?
In Brighton, that's right. So, you know, it wasn't, there was a great seriousness about it as well, as being, you know, there was a great deal of passion there. And I was quite a serious, like, young thing. When people sort of say, well, you must have been one of the hippies. And I went, no, actually, I was very much of that beat generation. I was going to Paris and places to listen to jazz and find out where the, you know, what was happening over in Europe. and went and lived in Denmark and things like that, you know, sort of following music and stuff like that. So, yeah, I was very serious. I wasn't a flower power girl, I'm afraid, you know. I was very sort of like, you know.
I don't think you need to be afraid of that. I think that's fair enough. Everyone's different. And everyone brings their activism to it in different ways.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. I was always like, the band, the bomber. God. I think when you know, that Cuban crisis really put people on the spot. About, you know, sort of responsibility. And you realize how much irresponsibility there was out there. I was sad though that it, you know, that the women started banning men, because like my poet John, he was such a, you know, he was both so yin and yang. He's just so, you know, there was so much yin in him, and being a poet, he was just like, he really wanted to embrace and feel all the things that everybody was feeling. So he was sort of like a little bit like, yeah, I felt a bit very cross about that one, which was a shame, but yeah. You know, they had their reasons.
Yeah. I mean, did you stop going at that point, or did you continue going but without John?
Well, I went both times without John, tell the truth. No, I didn't. No, I think John came along. I think John came along the second time when we embraced the bass.
Yeah,
I think he must have done. Yeah, but it doesn't really sort of stop me. I just had to get on with my life and do other things because, you know, as I say, I'd left a marriage. I was penniless, and I had to pick up my life. Yeah. You know, I was living in a one-bedroom flat. My kids were, you know, sleeping in the kitchen in bunk beds, and we were absolutely penniless. So I had to sort of, you know, get some menial work because I couldn't make any money as a singer. So it was just circumstances, really.
What do you think politicized you in the first place to even get you to being an activist and being engaged with these things that are going on in the world?
Oh, it was the Cuban crisis. It was about 57, was it, the Cuban crisis? Do you remember?
I mean, I do remember.
It was very early on, and I was, you know, living with students and up in North London at the time. And it really, there was a complete power cut at that time too. It was very uncanny. There was a complete blackout in London at the same time, and it really felt scary. It really, really felt scary, and it woke me up, and it woke all the friends of mine who of my generation, you know, up. And that's in many ways was the core of so much of the CND people, and, you know, the sort of and I'm sure, I mean, I'm sure you know very much, because you've been interviewing all the people from Greenham Common, that they must have woken up at about the same time if they're my age.
Yeah, well, all from different things. You know, some have said that they were very politicised from very young, you know, if they grew up in families that were particularly socialist or anything, and some came from completely the opposite. It was just with Greenham and meeting people. You know, some of the women we've interviewed went to Greenham not really knowing a huge amount about the nuclear missiles or anything, but just going along and then being woken up to it while they were there and understanding it all. So, yeah, people coming from very, very different places to it, really.
Yeah. Well, I certainly think that the Cuban crisis, which was literally, you know, it was about missiles. It was about bombing smaller powers who were standing up for their rights. And I think that you know, I've always, since then, I've always been sort of on the verge of something, but trying to keep my music going too, which is, and my garden and my kids, and keeping them all on the straight and narrow, or whatever they, you know. So, and myself on the straight and narrow too, because, you know, so, yeah.
Do you think Are your kids quite political? Are they, you know, politically engaged?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes, they are. I mean, sometimes, you know, my son is a little bit he's skeptical. Mm-hmm. I mean, he'll certainly go on, you know, demonstrations. He will certainly go on demonstrations, but he's much more skeptical about change. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, you know, is so such an easy thing to become skeptical about change, mm-hmm. because change is so slow. And, you know, just like with Greenham, you know, it's just like all of a sudden, you know, the government wanting to spend, you know, another, you know, 40% more on arms and more missiles. And, you know, and you think to yourself, you know, have we got to start all over again? Are we starting this all over again?
Yeah.
So, and then, of course, you know, what with the other law, which is, you know, to try and stop us demonstrating.
Yeah.
It's just too unbelievably. And of course, and he's become a little bit cynical. You know, he's been, you know, he's sort of like almost throwing up his arms and saying, you know, sort of, mother, I'll demonstrate, but we won't make much difference, you know?
It's but I think, hard, isn't it? Getting in, because, you know, he's not wrong in a way. And I think we all feel like that sometimes, but maybe pointing back to Greenham and say, look, they made a difference.
yeah, that's right. And my daughter lived in New York for a long time, and she was sort of like pretty active over there. Sometimes it misses generations too.
Yeah. Do you think younger people today know about Greenham?
Well, that's interesting. They certainly don't on my estate, because it's about 90% black. It's a wonderful community. But I mean, if you've got any Greenham common posters that I can stick up in the community hall, yeah, or in the library, then they will know, because, you know, sort of, you know.
What activism do you think they're aware of on your estate? Are they aware of activism, do you think?
Oh, well, only black activism, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, black, of course, you know, black matter, you know, so it's very strong. And of course, in South London and Brixton and places like that, you know, it is. And women are very strong. I mean, you know, we have about 29,000 people on our estate. It's big.
Activists today, like Black Lives Matter, like Extinction Rebellion, have learnt things from Greenham.
Yeah.
What do you think they're doing that's similar, or that you know, that they've gained from the Greenham protests?
I think certainly the solidarity.
Mm.
The solidarity. And I think that solidarity that went on for such a, you know, so many years of suffering and persecution and, you know, manhandling by police. And, you know, that whole ethos of, you know, like a dog with a bone, not letting go. It was extraordinary. And that must have really sort of like, you know, sort of got into the psyche of a lot of people. And it's something that ought to be, you know, as I say, refreshed, really refreshed. And in people's minds, the actual suffering that you have to go through to create change.
Earlier about making banners, can you remember what was on the banners that you made?
Well, this is what I was saying to Ilse, actually. I was saying, what do we put on the banners? And she says, God, I can't remember, but I dig out the photographs. You know, it's like when you're preparing for a demonstration, I mean, when you've got children literally hanging on to the side of your, you know, coat.
Yeah.
Hungry always.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, you know, one hand is literally feeding them, the other hand is like, you know, creating something and all the rest of it. So it's I don't really remember, and this is why I want Ilse to dig out these yeah, photographs of our banners, because apparently we spent the whole day making them before we left. So and it's really, you know, and when I phoned her yesterday and she said, you don't want me to go through my photographs. I said, Ilse, I would love you to, but of course, you know, yeah, I'm not going to get you to do it right now. But, you yeah, know, I might try and get you to do it, and then I can send them to you. Yeah.
Did you, you mentioned also briefly earlier the police, did you have, you know, anything to do with the police while you were there? Did you come across them and how, you know, how they dealt with the protesters?
No.
Didn't see them at all, no.
No, I mean, it's interesting that there's certainly, I mean, you know, there were lots of pictures in the papers. There were lots of pictures in the papers of what was happening, and that's why it was included. You know, the sort of the verse about the, you know, the police always acting like gents, hauled them off of the fence, maybe broke a few arms, but they meant no harm. They were just trying to make you see sense. Yeah. And that verse is literally just because of the, you know, sort of we knew what was happening.
Yeah,
you know, you couldn't be there all the time, and it was going on for years.
Yeah.
And we, you know, we saw that, you know, they were breaking in, they were, you know, they were pushing their, you know, and of course they were, you know, having, you know, they were, the police were being very confrontational. But I mean, unfortunately, it was a missile base, wasn't it? It was a missile base, and they, you know, that was their job.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have liked to have actually, you know, gone through what they went through.
Did you take part in any non-violent direct action? Apart, I mean, obviously you did by surrounding the base and things. Was that, was there anything else that you took part in while you were there?
Not while I was there, no.
No.
No. Other than the just the sort of the solidarity of, yeah, of everything and the, and bringing food to the camp. So, yeah.
That's a very valuable thing, bringing food to the camp.
Yeah, people, that's right.
You lived there, definitely.
Yeah. And I suppose, in a sense, always going back and talking to other people, you know, about the experience, and just that process, I think, really sort of people are very, very sort of, it's like spreading the word when things are really, really sort of like, you know, it's a bit like creating the song, you know, it's I sing that song quite often. And when I'm performing, I sing a lot of my political songs nowadays, much more so than I used to, tell the truth. When John was alive, you know, I choose sort of set lists of songs. And I think there's certainly, as you know, as I grow older, I sort of realize that, you know, I'm leaving behind my generation, my kids, my grandchildren. And I want to sort of put a grandmother mark in the world, you know. Yeah, and so yeah.
Yeah, why do you think that is important? I suppose, you know, to carry Greenham home, really, but also to pass it on to future generations.
I think, yes, it's the importance of solidarity and getting out there. And I mean, Greta's been fantastic as a young person. Yeah. And it's interesting how many sort of like middle-aged people say, oh, she's a complete lunatic. And I just, you know, and of course the young people know damn well that she's not a lunatic. She's has everything, you know, at heart. And anybody who's demonstrated knows that she's not she really actually cuts those people in half. Mm. Those who think that have never gone on demonstrations. I reckon, and the ones who
I reckon too, yeah,
and the ones who say, yeah, she's amazing. It's just like, yes, this is exactly what we've been, you know, sort of like, you know, we've been doing for the last, you know, God, how many years since my first demonstration against the nuclear missiles outside Grosvenor House, and that went on too. We were there. We were camping out there until, you know. But anyway,
you camped out there, did you?
Yeah. We just literally took sleeping bags and just slept on the steps and wouldn't move. I mean, we couldn't move. There was nowhere to go. It was like as if it was going to be the end of the world. Mm. It was really weird.
Yeah.
If you can imagine that.
Yeah, I think that is, it's hard to get across to younger people how that, you know, that fear, you know, there's the, it's that immediacy of it, wasn't it? That, you know, people genuinely did think the world is going to end. That they are going to blow up, you know, this is going to happen. So many people did die from, you know, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And I don't know how much young people now really understand that, the terror that people felt, and that's why they were protesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And the amount of people who died from the leakages up at Sellafield and Windscale, you know, up at Calder, you know, these figures. I mean, John's mother died when he was 21 of cancer, living in the shadows. You know, I was sort of feeding my kids with what I thought was, you know, things that I collected because I was, you know, I loved foraging. And it could have been, yeah. And when I think about it afterwards, I think to myself, it's absolutely tragic of the amount of people who died of just the radioactivity that got into the soil and, you know, the leakages. And, it's a terrible thing, that ostrich in the sand sort of attitude towards our world.
Yeah, it's not directly affecting people immediately. People tend to, well, some people, a lot of people.
I think it's changing, though, don't you think so? I think it is changing amongst the young. I mean, if we can just get rid of that sort of like awful generation of rich. Sorry, I shouldn't say this because I'm being interviewed.
You can say whatever you like,
rich conservatives in the middle belt of England, you know. But I mean, it's not just the middle belt of England. It's the Welsh, you know, in Wales, and it's in the north, as you must know yourself, you know. Is a kind of real sort of anti anybody who demonstrates, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. I think it's that fear as well, because place, you know, like it was the case with Greenham, with, you know, the amount of people that the RAF base employed, it often comes down to employment, doesn't it?
It does.
I think that, you know, people who, you know, are in those jobs where they're like, well, we need the work, and yes, it may not be work that's saving the planet, but I can't get a job saving the planet, and these people are offering me work. So it's so difficult, isn't it?
Oh, it's so difficult.
Yeah, it's not an easy, it's not black and white to just go, well, no, why are you doing that?
Yeah,
it is. You know, we understand why some people have, you know, feel they have to do that, that they have to support their families. I think that's what's really difficult to break. Some people would, you know, say, well, I'd love to be an activist, but I can't afford to be.
Yeah.
And that's it. It is cracking that, the higher up, the rich, you know, providing jobs that aren't damaging the planet.
Yeah. No, it's a hard one. It's a hard one.
So what do you think, to finish off, is the legacy of Greenham? What do you think? You know,
the legacy, have I not actually said that the legacy of Greenham is their fight,
solidarity,
their you know, their dedication, and their and also the way that they all tied together with such solidarity, really, and also, you know, of course, a bit like what they say about football at the moment. Unfortunately, you know, they say, you know, because we haven't got the fans, we don't play so well. So you need to have the supporters. You need the supporters, you know, however much you demonstrate. You need to have the support so that you can feel it's a worthy, and you're doing it for everybody else. You're doing it for the world. You're not just doing it for yourself. You know, you need to, that's really, really quite important.
Absolutely. Yeah, solidarity has definitely been the key word in your interview. That's brilliant. Well, thank you so much for speaking to me, Amarelle. It's been an absolute pleasure meeting you. Thank you.
Well, that's my pleasure, Vanessa.